This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Podcasting. It's easier than you think, and Free FM has everything you need, from help with initial planning right through to hosting and delivery across popular podcast platforms. Our content creators are just ordinary people delivering engaging weekly podcasts and radio shows on all sorts of issues that affect them, their communities, and our society. We're really keen to support new content by, for, and about a wide range of community groups and issues. Interested? Go to freefm.org.nz or see our Facebook page to find out more.
Welcome to Connect with Community Waikato on Free FM 89.0. I am Holly Snape. I am from Community Waikato, and I have invited Jane Landham to join me today. Jane is from Waimaria Community House, or Hamilton East Community House. Welcome. It's actually great to have you here. We've known each other since I first started at a community house, because you were there, before me.
I was.
When did you start?
Oh, my God. December 2001, yes.
2001. Yeah, so you've been there a little while now.
Been there a little while.
I noticed that when we had at the manager's forum, we put our hands up with regard to how long we'd been in an organisation, and there were some stale warts in the room.
That was frightening.
And you were among them. Which is great, actually. We're going to have a conversation today about that community broadly that Jane works in, and also about the particular role that the community house plays in that community. Some fantastic services coming out of there. Let's roll back to when you even started, though. What attracted you to a role at a community house?
Way back then. One thing, I'm quite attracted to what I call kind of pioneering jobs, because it's like you get the opportunity to create it yourself and set up systems and all that sort of stuff. So that attracted me. Also, the fact that it was just down the road from where I lived at the time, and I had two young children, and I was parenting alone, so that was a real big plus. And in the event I could take them to work with me, and we kind of set up a room as a sort of sick bay with video and books and things, so that was a big plus. So I guess those little things, they made a big difference.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I obviously didn't have children, but I had dogs, and it was great. I could take them to work too. So I know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
There's a unique type of role managing a community house, in that there isn't a template for it, is there? There isn't a, this is how you run a community house. You actually have to be driven by the community that you're based in.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about Hamilton East and maybe how it might have changed over time?
Hamilton East has changed enormously. When I first started, it was pretty much all residential. It was owner-occupiers, most of it. It was an older houses, a residential kind of leafy suburb. There were the student area as well. But over the years, there's been a lot of infill because of the zoning. It's zoned high residential. All around the university, huge, all around Hamilton East.
Yeah, it started around the university, didn't it? Where they started taking away, say, the 3 and 4 bedroom houses, and then putting on top of, on those that land, a 6 unit, facility almost. And it is interesting you say, and I think even at my time being in Hamilton, I've also seen that infill coming into some of those beautiful old properties that had lovely backyards that are now filled with almost kit set, 3 bedroom house.
Yeah, so with that, of course, there's been a quite a big increase in population. The community is probably more diverse. But with because there's so many kind of little sort of flats, apartments, and around the university, although a lot of the people that live in those places are actually not students, but those kind of bedsit places, because they're reasonably affordable. And so with that, I guess we've seen an increase in the sort of people that live there too. There's more people, there's more struggling people, I think. And with that, of course, then you get the corresponding social problems as well, the poverty and the
It's interesting, isn't it, that Hamilton East doesn't traditionally have that the reputation for being a low income community, perhaps not like places like Beta and Fairfield and you know, places like that, and yet we absolutely see good evidence of poverty in the Hamilton East community. And in fact, from one of the last times I looked anyway, it also registered in one of the highest crime rated areas in terms of thefts.
Highest in the city.
Yeah.
And it's one of the lowest economic areas as well. And like you say, people don't realise that, but it actually is.
Yeah.
So, which has changed quite a lot. So it is quite a different... it's a quite a different place than what it was. Yeah, and I guess over that time, of course, we tried to sort of save the lovely houses and mostly lost that battle. But we did manage to save 15 houses in Firth Street. So bottom half of Firth Street is a village villa precinct, heritage precinct. So those houses... down that end, but you see, and Albert Street was beautiful too. But so half of Albert Street is normal residential, and the other half is high residence. So on that side, they're all apartments, and on
It's so sad to see that happen, isn't it? Because you know, it's a very good example. You drive down that space, and you know, half of it is beautiful, absolutely stunning, amazing trees. You know, and then you look to the other side, and it's these brick. You know, horrible. I mean, look, it's affordable though, and there is that balance.
Well, I don't even know if they are that affordable, really. I mean, I've seen the prices of some of those apartments, and they're not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. So I'm not sure. So it'll be interesting to see in another 20 years or another 30 years to see.
Yeah.
You know, how that pans out, but yeah.
So that would have had quite a bit of an impact on the sort of work that you've done at the community house too, and you know, and I know you've been hugely active in the environmental space, I think through the whole of your career in the community house. Which is fantastic. But what sort of programs and facilities have you had to change in regards to meet that need for growing poverty in the community?
Well, I think... I guess like one thing we do now that we never contemplated doing was food. As probably you know, that the with Go Eco, the Kyvolution collecting food and redistributing it. So we collect food. We have a volunteer, amazing volunteer, Paula. Thank you, Paula, who for years has been collecting this for us, and also the Sunshine Bakery. Big thank you to you as well in Knighton Road. Give us the unsold produce. It's frozen sandwiches, pies, whatever is left over, basically. And then once a week, we don't really advertise it, but we do give out food once a week, frozen food. People come and get that. Or we had to sort of limit it to one day because otherwise it got a bit out of hand.
Well, and also you're not a food bank. You're not a formal food bank. You don't get food in the quantities that those do, but you are a facility that connects with people in the community, and you can see where there is need.
Because we've had people say, referred people to us to and we have to say, well, we're not actually a food bank. We can give you some food, but
and it might tide you over for a meal, but that's right. But the intention is you really need to go and access that additional support from some of those other places, like the Combined Christian Food Bank, or like the Kyvolution food pantry.
And there are quite a few of those now. But I mean, the food banks, actually, it's not that easy to get food from a food bank. It's actually quite a rigmarole. You have to have letters from WINS, and you have to do all this stuff. Whereas, well, we don't do that. People just put their name and address, and that's, we just keep for our statistics. So we don't ask any questions, and we don't care if people come back every week or whatever. And on other times, if it's we'll give people food if there's a need for it. Mm. But in terms of our other services, I mean, some of the services are the same. Like we've been doing like budgeting service. The change of that is that we don't employ Barry anymore, but he still comes on the same day. He's employed by the Budget Advisory Trust.
Yeah, well, they did a whole lot of... There was a big change, wasn't there, in how they contracted budgeters. So it's great that you're still able to have that service based where you are as well.
Well, it was good for us too, because we didn't have to do the administration around employment and get the funding and all of that. So that was great. And we still have a phone legal, just a phone legal service at the moment.
It's a good idea to have it on the phone, though. That makes sense.
Well, clients don't turn up and then they get annoyed.
Understandable.
Absolutely.
We've had the same problem. Yeah.
And we're only covering family law at the moment. Well, like, this is, Emma's about our fourth lot of lawyers. They tend to do it for a few years and then they sort of have enough and they need to get another one. Other things that we do are still like photocopying and laminating. We sell fruit and veggie boxes, which are purchased for $11, but they're really good value and they last you a week for family.
They're an opportunity for, you're able to purchase wholesale, essentially, so you get reasonable prices, and because you've got more people participating, gives you more buying power, essentially.
Yeah, although the numbers aren't that high at the moment, so really if you do want a good value fruit and veggie box, come and see us, and that's ordered on Wednesday and Thursday.
Who do you go through?
Bidvest, which is our wholesalers, and we hire our rooms, and we do community education courses, and those change. We've been doing that pretty much from the beginning as well, but just the courses change. Things get popular, and then they wax and wane, and so we've done all sorts of things from jewellery making, real jewellery making with anvils and hammers and welding and stuff, right through to different languages, mosaic tiling. At the moment, we're doing Tai Chi, French conversation, very informal, yoga. What else do we do? We have community gardening on Fridays.
I am going to talk about the community gardening, a whole separate thing, because it's a big thing. Those courses, it's important they change. Obviously, they reflect what's happening in the community and the community need, and desire, because that's the other thing. Community houses just aren't just about responding to need. They're about promoting well-being. So it's being proactive as well and looking for the positive vein.
Yes, I guess for me, my personal vision is to sort of try to create this beautiful space in the middle of the city, so kind of a little haven with the garden and the trees, and I'm really into all that. So trying to create this lovely space where people could feel energized and peaceful, and also with the work we do. I mean, I've never done that stop smoking, da da stuff. I've tried to focus on joyful things, like that are fun, not heavy. And I figure that there's enough misery out there. Like, let's not add to it. Let's just inject some joy, some laughter, So that's kind of where we come for that. And we've done a lot of things and it does change. And it's actually quite hard to know what people want because we've done surveys and needs analysis and all that sort of thing. And you can get people saying, 40 people saying, I want to learn Arabic. So you tee up an Arabic class and nobody comes.
Yeah.
So it's not really indicative of what people say, what they do, not the same thing,
Yeah, I often found when we'd do the research, we'd say, what do you think this community needs? And parenting. But, they seem to think it's everyone else needs that, but they're not going to attend.
Yes. Absolutely.
You're absolutely right. Sort of find out what people were actually be able to get to. And of course, people have got lots of conflicting sort of, things going on. But the beauty of the community house is it's that place to come together, and to bump into each other and have conversations.
Absolutely. And people come in for one thing, they might order a veggie box or something, and then they might say, oh, there's a class on. So they might, that's awesome when that happens. So then you build these relationships. And like, we have Neighbours Day in March.
What do you guys do for Neighbours Day?
Very simple. We have a sausage sizzle, and we just put our barbecue out the front, and we might have some fruit or whatever's around. And we have this amazing woman, Alice. We love you, Alice. Alice Bulmer, who's a ukulele. She teaches ukulele.
How cool!
And she's been doing that for quite a few years now, and that's just awesome. And just for the last few years, she'd come along with their ukulele players, and so we have ukulele music and singing, and it's so cool. And we basically drag people in off the street. They're walking past, come and have a sausage.
Oh, I love it.
And they always look at you like you're going to charge them. It's free, because people aren't used to free stuff.
And it is true,
And it's just such a cool thing. It's so simple, but it's really awesome. So we try and keep things simple. We don't do a lot of it, very, very small. So we don't do a lot of events, but occasionally we do. But we always do Neighbours Day. That's kind of a tradition. And today, actually, the gardeners are having their Christmas barbecue, so I've asked them to keep me some. But we do little things like that. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. We're going to take a very short break. We're going to listen to some Funky Town by Pseudo Echo. It's a good little injection of some 80s music, and for those of you who listen to us regularly, you'll notice I've been doing a bit of that. I must just be on a bit of a buzz. So we're going to listen to some Pseudo Echo, and when we come back, we're actually going to talk about these gardeners and the garden there at Waimarie Community House, because it is quite a fantastic space.
Take me to a funky town. Won't you take me to a funky town?
Funky Town. That's quite fun, eh? It's really energetic. We've even got too much longer, but I do want us to turn to the garden because, you know, from my perspective, that's one of the things that you guys are really known for. It's something that no other community house does quite like you do it. And you're mm-hmm. so lucky to have that beautiful space right next door to you. So tell us about what this garden is.
The garden's been going, well, it's just, we started it, I'd only been in the job about 3 months.
So started in 2001?
2002, because it was the end of 2000.
Yes, yeah.
What happened was I had a visit from a guy called Andrew Thompson, who's an OT from with the DHB, and he said I had a group of guys who were recovering from mental illness, and they were wanting to do some gardening, so they were trying to find a space to do that. And that's how it started. We started on our section, and the section, the Symington Estate, which is where the garden is, belongs to the council, still does, and we managed to get permission to have a garden on the land, which we did, and we've developed over the years. Janet Sexton was the person in those days, which was lovely. And then we developed the gardens over time. Hasn't really changed that much. It's still similar people, but anybody can come. We have a garden facilitator, Sarah. We've had a few over the years. Cheryl Noble did it for 10 years when she was with the Hamilton Permaculture Trust.
Wow.
And Sarah, we employ Sarah just for one morning, and she facilitates the group, and she they go in and they write the tasks on. She writes the tasks on the board, and then people decide what they want to do. They have morning tea and lunch. We have a volunteer cook at the moment. We have Sue, who's a vegan, and she's amazing. And she also helps people transition from meatarians, whatever they're called, to vegetarian. But she makes the most amazing.
Have you transitioned?
Lunches. No, not completely, but I guess like a lot of people these days, I am eating less meat.
Yeah.
But she does this amazing things with herbs and spices.
Fantastic.
And she's just brilliant. So that's fantastic. The garden it's mainly therapeutic. Like it's more about the therapeutic benefits of gardening, really, than how much produce we have and stuff like that.
Yeah. And there is something very therapeutic about being touching the earth, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the social aspects are really important to the gardeners too. And for some people, they may not have hardly spoken to anybody that week. They may not have had a square meal for several days. So there's quite a lot of aspects of it.
Yeah.
So we grow vegetables, and we also have sort of fruit trees, and we have like scented garden. And we used to have chickens, but we don't have the chickens anymore. So things kind of change, and we've got little spaces, like we've got the little free library in the garden with a seat, and that's really popular, except somebody burnt it down a while ago. But a lovely man, neighbour, built us a new one, not as beautiful as the other one, but it is
still
functional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And very kind of the neighbour to do that.
It was awesome, because he'd already built it. He came and told me that it was burnt, and I cried, and then he came back half an hour later with the new one. So
wow
that was cool, and people love that. And so there's a seat and a sculpture, and so people can just come and sit in the garden and just chill out, and that's really cool. And so we've been going for a long time, but as I said, it's mainly therapy.
Yeah. And if someone wanted to get involved with that garden, do they have to contact you, or like how do they do it?
They just give us a call, and we get them to fill in an enrolment form with their details, and we do a short health and safety briefing.
Oh, it's important. It's very important.
Yeah, and
especially with like a lot of soil stuff, actually. You know, you're meant to wear masks if you're opening
certain
up.
Times of the year, the compost and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but a lot of people, we have a lot of people coming and going, you know, so we don't want to get too much into paperwork because, you know, you just end That's up with right. piles of paper. So we have our regular group, and like thinking about Alan and Richard and Marika, and like they've been coming to the garden group, some of them, almost as long as it's been in existence.
Wow.
So some of the gardeners have been there longer, you know, 10, 12 years longer.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really becomes a really a place where people come, you know, every week that's what they do. They yeah. come along, and it's, yeah, it's quite special. You know, it has its problems. You know, it's not, you know, we struggle sometimes to get funding, although we're okay at the moment. And things like that. We have to pay rent to the council now for the land. We didn't used to have to do that, and things like that. But I think overall, and we've toyed with the idea of doing differently, you know, doing allotment system like they do at Greenview and things like that. But
it works for you, doesn't it? You know, the way you do it works for you and what it is you're trying to achieve, which is not necessarily about people growing lots of vegetables, but it's about those connections and conversations and
people
relationships.
Can, and people can come and just get a few herbs or pick some puha or whatever. We had a pizza oven and people could come and do that, but that's sort of fallen apart now. But we used to have pizza, cooking pizza.
Maybe that's an activity for the future.
Yeah. And we've had adobe workshops in the garden. We've had groups of people visiting from schools and all over the place, actually. All over the country.
That's very cool.
Yeah, so that's quite cool. I love it when the kids come.
Yeah. So if people want to get involved or want to find out more, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, you can either just pop in between 9 and 4 to 53 Wellington Street, or you can give us a call, sign up for our e-newsletter, which is all of mainly our courses and activities, and you can read about our resident cat, Trevor, who's a big hit, actually.
Nice.
He has his own fan club.
Fantastic.
Big fan club.
It's very cool.
And he's actually raised $1,200 for himself.
Wow.
For his dental treatment, but it's quite expensive for that flu stuff and all that, but he is a big attraction. So you pop in, give us a call on 07-858-3453. Come down and have a look at our new spaces. We will planning an open day next year.
If people were going to Google you, would they Google Waimarie Community House or would they Google Hamilton East Community House?
Either or.
I think it would still come up.
Our address is waimarie.org. If you want to get onto the website.
So just before we wind up, which is in about 15 seconds, open day?
Yes, to celebrate our new renovations and our new look.
And what time next year might that be, roundabout?
We're hoping probably maybe end of January.
Cool.
Yeah, we just got a couple of things we have to finish off. Yeah.
Might even get you back to talk about it once you've done it, eh?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That's pretty cool. Okay. Thank you, Holiday.
Thank you, Jane. It's been great talking to you.
Yes, you too.
You've been listening to Connect with Community Waikato on 3FM 89.0.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.